I'll check now on my diary. And are we just meeting? Who are we meeting with?
Just the subcommittee. We've developed a document. We just want to
I'm not on the subcommittee.
No, she is, but she can't be.
Why can't you do two things at the same time? What is wrong with you? Hey, we've got questions for the minister.
Yeah, members, we're back. We may as well proceed because I think there's still some other work which we have to do. We are on chapter 7 now. Let's proceed to chapter 7, or with chapter 7, and then of course chapter 8, I don't think we're going to take long, chapter 9, chapter 10. Let me mention that so that you don't expect that we will leave this room having not gone through all this bill. Because it's Tuesday, we'll have to do more work today so that tomorrow we're able to adopt this bill, first by clause, and probably adopt the bill.
Tomorrow.
So that people would want to go
I
to.
Can't, I've got no meeting scheduled for tomorrow. Tomorrow morning. Up until 12:30. Are we finished tomorrow morning?
Okay. Take us first.
Thank you. Chairperson, chapter 7 on page 51 deals with reporting obligations and cooperation by members of the South African Police Service and Municipal Police Service and disciplinary recommendations. Clause 30 deals with reporting obligations and cooperation by members. This whole chapter has already been considered by the committee and we've just incorporated and shaded the part. 31 reads as follows. The station commissioner or any member of the South African Police Service or Municipal Police Service must A. immediately after becoming aware, notify the director of any matters referred to in section 29A to H, and B. within 24 hours thereafter, submit a written report to the director in the prescribed form and manner of any matter as contemplated in paragraph 8. Subclause 2. The members of the South African Police Service or Municipal Police Service must provide their full cooperation to the directors, including but not limited to the arrangement of an identification parade within 48 hours of the request made by the director. Securing the availability of members for the taking of an affidavit for an affirmed declaration or to give evidence or produce any document in that member's possession or under his or her control which has a bearing on the matter being investigated. And C. any other information or documentation required for investigation purposes. So, subclause 30 deals with the cooperation. The disciplinary recommendation is dealt with in clause 31. The National Commissioner or the appropriate provincial commissioner to whom recommendations regarding disciplinary matters were referred as contemplated in sections 7, 6 and 7 must, within 30 days of receipt thereof, initiate disciplinary proceedings in terms of the recommendations made by the director and inform the minister in writing of his or her decision to initiate such proceedings and provide a copy thereof to the executive director and the secretary. Quarterly submit a written report to the minister on the progress regarding disciplinary matters made in terms of paragraph 8 and provide a copy thereof to the executive director and the secretary. And immediately upon finalization of any disciplinary matter referred to by the director to inform the minister in writing of the outcome thereof and provide a copy thereof to the executive director and the secretary.
Hmm.
very happy with that. We arrest, let's stop reporting obligations. Members, if there is anything you want us to discuss, I want us to consciously agree with within 24 hours. There are, you know, the few people, sub-members I spoke to said, but 24 hours might be too limited.
No.
I was reminded of the Honorable George.
In fact,
it's gotta be
24. You remember, I argued that 24 hours is not reasonable. But I said I will not die. But to me, 48 hours would have been more, or if you give the time. But people felt very strongly that it must be within 24 hours.
We will submit a report to the directorate in the prescribed form and the manner of any matter as contemplated in paragraph A. What it actually means is that if it happened today, now it's 3 before 3 o'clock the following day, we must have submitted the report.
And that's plenty of time.
I'm raising it because I think I did just check with few people and some were actually saying but 48 hours I said I don't know. They said 48 hours is reasonable. It, in fact, otherwise if you don't meet the 24 hours it means you've committed crime. And I said no, it's fine, but 24 hours. So I will
say
24 hours.
But Madam Chair, are these people here these good people? Good people? Are they not persuasive? To this 48 hours, you know, like I said, the we are doing something for not only for ICID but also for the police. And to me, the relationship must not be adversarial. it must be aimed at making sure that the police are transformed. Because I'm worried. I'm looking at. It's easy to say from three now. But you must understand, there is a time when there is a limited number of police in the evening, from evening to say, so you've got a 12 hours where the number of police at work is limited. You see, so as I'm saying, will heavens fall, I know my neighbor here was very strong.
In fact, one of them was actually referring to strikes. To say if we have this violent strike, we said it's delivery related protest matches and so on. But actually saying you find that you are here but maybe the following day you are elsewhere and something happens, you are never in the police station. What happens then? Does it mean that you've already committed crime? They were actually saying that, but I'm bringing it back just for us to say no, we are saying 24 hours.
And
can we hear from the ICD?
Chairperson, presently they are already reporting within 24 hours. There are also their own directives to that effect. And we see where they have reported telephonically. We've never had a problem that they report in writing also within 24 hours.
Okay.
Only problem is where they haven't reported at all.
No, that's it. But we're talking about the written report here, the 24 hours. Because they are expected to report immediately to notify you, and then thereafter, within 24 hours, submit a written report. That's what we're talking about. That is what is happening.
Yes.
No, thank you very much.
Well,
so that's fine. The members of the sub or municipal council must provide their full cooperation to the directorate. We take that. We said not limited to all this.
Mm.
And I think we are covered. Mm. Okay?
Okay.
We can proceed to chapter 8.
Thank you, Chair. Chapter 8 deals with the finance and accountability and annual report. Section 32.1, just the numbering amendment. And then same with subsection 2, basically. clause 33 due for the annual report, and the only amendment relates to subsection 2C, where we say that a detailed report on the activities of the directorate undertaken during the year to which it all relates must be included in the annual report. A detailed report on the activities of the directorate undertaken during the year to which the audit relates also in be included in the annual report. That's the only amendment, Chair, under Clause 33, Chapter 8. Chapter 9, Chairperson, deals with offence and penalties, and the amendment relates to Subsection 3. just to Chapter 3 reads, any police officer who fails to comply with Section 30, which is not cheap with Section 30, it's not even my... Sorry, what is it? It relates to failure to report. Yeah, reporting obligations.
Oh, yeah.
Section 30 deals with reporting obligations. Will be guilty of an offence and liable on conviction to a fine or to imprisonment for a period not exceeding 2 years. Then 4, speaks to conflict of interest. Any member who fails to make a disclosure in accordance with Section 26(2)(a) or fails to withdraw in terms of Section 26(2)(b) as the case may be, is guilty of an offence and liable on conviction to a fine or to imprisonment for a period not exceeding 2 years. So it's now an offence, a respect of non-disclosure or failure to withdraw from investigation as required in terms of 26(2)(b). That is on Chapter 9.
Could I just ask, I raised this when we initially went through the bill, and I'm thinking back to the forensic bill that we've just completed. That we put in the forensic bill a mandatory sentence. We took out with the option of a fine. I'm just wondering, you know, if we're talking here about, you know, police officers guilty of offences, etc., etc., why are we now giving them the option of a fine? I mean, are we now going to be in a position where a police officer who is guilty of an offence can just pay and just carry on as though nothing happened? I don't know. I want to know what the implications are to a police officer who is found guilty and sentenced either to a fine or prison. Are they then ejected from the fact, fired? I don't know. I just need input there.
Well, my question is different, Madam Chair, on Subsection 33(4). You know, this question of disclosure does not only apply to members of the IP. It applies to public servants. It applies to what are the penalties there? I'm just worried that we make a penalty which is not in line with other penalties. What is the penalty for failure to disclosure? Because I have seen here a disciplinary process is set in Parliament, and a person is given a lap of $500 for not disclosure. Mm-hmm. So that's why I'm asking,
mm-hmm.
what is the law? Because I don't want that, especially in a situation in something that affects everybody. You have a law that is tougher for IP when it is not tougher for other areas.
So, Chairperson, I actually thought that we've discussed this issue at length, where we said that this is not complying with that specific section.
Mm-hmm.
The police officer will still, if that police officer is the accused or etc., would still have that added criminal offences, and that would be the verdict on that, and the imprisonment or non-imprisonment of that would be separate. I don't think that we can really legislate that somebody needs to be removed from the service because they didn't comply with those Section 30s, because there might be different circumstances and there might be different reasons. So I think the way we've got it currently is as far as we can go. The question that Mr. George is asking also is, I think in terms of, it's a valid question whether it's in line with other legislation. I just think it's unfortunate to try and compare it with members of parliament non-disclosure with investigators non-disclosure, because surely a member of parliament cannot influence an investigation. We're not investigators. Here it is because the non-disclosure can actually hamper a case and can actually, it can actually kill the case or influence the case.
Mm.
And the only question that I think remains is whether this is in line with other, for instance, where it's required of the walks to disclose, whether it's in line with that. And I think that's basically, we've got to try and compare apples with apples, I think.
Mm.
Can you respond to that?
Thank you. I just want to add, it's basically dealing with investigations.
Mm-hmm.
You could have an effect or impact on the investigation conducted, financial interest, or any other interest. Failure to make any disclosure could affect the case, basically, investigation of the case. That's why we have it as an offense, dealing failure to do so, and what's now being seen as
effective. Sorry, Chair. Just if I might, I'm looking specifically at 34.1. Where you have cases, for example, an alleged rape by two police in Nizhna, and here we are 8 months down the line, and they have yet to appear. The other SATS members are seem to be having them elsewhere. Every time they try and do a lineup, they evaporate, and they're being protected by their own. So, if it is proven that any person who is now interfering and obstructing this case, let us say it is found to be sufficiently serious and they're given 2 years imprisonment. Does that automatically then mean, it means automatically dismissal, doesn't it, from the criminal record and you're out?
Yeah.
Okay, that's all I want. Thank you.
Yeah.
Mm. But also you have a disciplinary procedure, which is separate from that, you know. Like I indicated, you know, somebody may not be found guilty by a court of law,
mm-hmm.
but the employer following his or her disciplinary procedure
mm-hmm.
will find you guilty according to the internal processes. So yeah, those are two processes that can run concurrent. In fact, usually they run concurrent. The other one is in court, the other one is within the department.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Chair. The next clause, Chapter 10, due to the regulation, conditional arrangements, appeal and short-term information. Regulation, the Minister may, after consultation with the Executive Director, make regulation, and the amendment that we have is the regulation regarding the procedure to follow in investigating matters referred to in Section 29.1A2H, as the type of matters to be investigated by the Executive Director.
Mm.
And then the other amendment relates to any issue to be contained in the annual report contemplated in Section 33. So the Minister will make regulations regarding any issues to be contained in the annual report. J, the procedure and format to be followed regarding reporting to the Director as contemplated in Section 281. I think the format, this is just an alignment with the format for the reporting obligation for, I think, the 24-hour reporting.
Mm-hmm.
It should speak to that one, Chair. So I think it's just a cross-reference there, but it actually refers to that, the format.
Mm-hmm.
29, should be 29-1.
It should be 29, yes?
29. Correct, that one.
Yes, 29-1.
Then K deals with the regulations regarding the procedure to be followed for the arrangement and the holding of identification parades as contemplated in Section 32A.
Yeah.
I think the cross references we will attend to this cross-term again. Then L, the regulations regarding the procedure to be followed for the taking of an affidavit or an affirmed declaration to give evidence or produce any document in that member's possession or under his control which has a bearing on the matter being investigated as concentration section 32B. M. Procedure to be followed for the submission of any other information or documentation required for the investigation purposes as contemplated in section 32C. N. The procedure to be followed in respect of disciplinary recommendations as contemplated in section 31. O. The manner and procedure to secure a crime scene to be investigated by the directorate. And further member relates to the subsection 2, subclause 2. The regulations refer to subsection 1A to O must be submitted to Parliament for scrutiny at least 1 month before promulgation while it is in session, or B, after the next session starts. Then 3, okay, 3 you haven't amended basically. The proposed amendment that we have under subclause 1 relates to issues that we've identified that need to be prescribed. So the committee asked us the last time just to align those matters that must be prescribed and identify those as shaded in yellow. Thank you, Chair.
Okay.
The next clause, Chair, transitional arrangement, and I think the only amendment relates to 5. The security clearance issued before the fixed date remains valid until such time it is reissued in terms of this act. I think that was also something which the committee has considered already. 6. Basically just the reference to the independent complaints directorate currently as is. And then the all matters which relate to the service complaints of the South African Police Service will be transferred to the South African Police Service and where appropriate the Secretariat. Thank you, Chair.
Secretariat ICD, do you want to comment on that? Any comment? Executive Director?
No.
No question. I hope it's not lunch syndrome.
The question of duty or I'm off.
Yeah. Chair, the one thing we didn't ever look at, which we parked, to use your phrase, was the name. It's quite a cumbersome name of this director. And I was wondering if we would consider a three-word name like the Directorate of Police Investigation, DPI, or a shorter name because it's quite cumbersome.
Are we there already?
Oh, I thought we were.
Thank you, Chair. The next amendment relates to clause 37, but that will be dealt with in the schedule. And schedule 1, basically, the amendment relates to the amendment to the Domestic Violence Act. I think that is the last time we deleted the reference of the repeal, and now we brought in the amendment to the Domestic Violence Act. And basically, it is section 18 of the Domestic Violence Act, and the responsibility there will now be on no longer on the independent complaints director, but on the secretariat. And the reference to the secretariat will act has also been effective. And I think that's basically the essence of the amendment. Basically, so the functions now currently being performed by the ICD. Will be performed by the Secretariat, and the Secretariat legislation will also make express reference to the monitoring role with regard to the Domestic Violence Act. And then in Schedule 2, it basically just removes the repeal of the domestic, Section 8 of the Domestic Violence Act. So, thank you, Chair.
Are
there
any I've had an issue with this for a while, and should we not be looking at it while we are amending this section? I mean, under what circumstances should the police be allowed to not comply with the Domestic Violence Act? Should we not be changing that now?
Mm.
maybe we should discuss this under the secretariat rule, because it's something we want to propose after a workshop we had on Saturday with the women's group, that we remove that.
Yeah.
Mm. Because the Domestic Violence Act has been in existence for long enough for police should be compliant, but it's something that we should discuss under the secretariat.
Okay. Fair enough.
Seemingly there's nothing again on that front. No, it's not all. We still have a lot of work to do on the doctor. Can we go back, remember, go back to... Can we go back to page... Hold on, I was telling you. Yeah, to page 18.
18.
Yeah. Of this bill. Section 3. I think it's section 11.3. It says the executive director may not delegate any of the powers, functions, or duties referred to it in section 7, 1, 2, 3, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, and 10, 8, 21, 23, 24, 32, whatever number, 36. And can we go to section 7.3? Yes, section 7.3. It's a non-delegated function. 7.3a, it says the executive director must appoint such staff as may be necessary to enable the directorate to perform its functions in terms of this act. Can I really be explained as to what does this mean? Does it mean that the executive director will employ a clean? Does it mean that? Because this is a non-delegated function. What does this mean? Can I get clarity on this one? The executive director is responsible for no provincial heads, because I understand that. But the executive director must appoint such staff as may be necessary to enable the directorate to perform its functions in terms of this act. Does it mean that the executive director and executive director alone is supposed to appoint investigators? Alone?
Yeah. Yeah,
a cleaner,
I need to
a gardener, a paper. Yes. I want us to consciously understand what this means, because it centralizes everything.
Mm-hmm.
Everything.
Yeah. Dr. I think from a practical point of view, and we've discussed this matter at length, I think it will place enormous administrative burden, you know, and I think there must be the leeway that the provinces can go ahead and afford. So I think maybe it will be better to delete that. I'm in agreement there.
What?
So in terms of staff, because it currently could, all staff must be appointed by the executive director. So if I'm not available, you know, it will be very difficult, you know. So I think it's important that that can be done. I agree with the chair. But to me, even if it was not abundant, normally you don't get an executive director appointing cleaner.
But that is what it means.
But
according to this, that's what it means. That's what I'm saying. So even if the executive director would have the time to do that, but I find it very difficult to. That is the executive director must appoint cleaners, strippers, tea girls, or whatever.
Tea girls, they employ 10-year-olds, don't they?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but you don't have them to see the guys. So I'm saying, Madam Chair, I think we must limit the appointments by the executive director to senior staff and investigators.
Yes, another
good analysis. So I would like to have clarity in terms of this issue. Surely, chairperson, it is the executive director that signs the appointment. That's what I understand this to mean. It's not the executive director conducting the interview of the cleaner or doing the but everybody in the end, as I understand it, but I'm not sure. That's why I say I would like clarity. Yeah, he can't delegate the signing of the contract. That's what it means, which I think is correct. Shouldn't there's one employee, employer.
Doesn't have to do the interview.
He doesn't have to do the interview, but he must employ that person ultimately. Who are we going to keep responsible if the tea lady or the tea man in the end is stealing dockets from the director? That's why I'm asking. I would like to get clarity. I mean, I don't think this is a. It's not an issue of conducting the interviews, of placing the advertisements. It's just a signature, like you would say. I'm trying to find out.
The way it normally works is that you don't have to be part of the process, but the recommendation and the letter comes to you and you sign the letter. Only, I mean, you can't have a chief director signing a letter saying that you're appointed, because the accounting officer is the executive director, so they sign the final letter.
Yeah.
Even in fact, the commissioner signs the final letter.
It doesn't mean he interviews
everybody. Doesn't mean he has to conduct the interview. That's what HR for.
Yeah.
They actually provide the process.
Yeah. Of course.
But the actual official appointment takes place through the accounting officer.
Yeah.
I still want to know, what does this mean? I mean, this statement as it stands here, the executive director must appoint such staff as may be necessary to enable the directorate to perform its functions in terms of this act. What does the statement mean?
Sign on.
It talks to signing.
Yeah, that's what it
does. And it's it talks to signing.
Yeah.
Not anything else, not the processes.
No. Well, he must determine processes, obviously, with his HR.
The executive director. Does it mean that? Is that the understanding?
But see, maybe from a practical point of view, I'm in agreement with you, because currently in terms of the delegations, level 12 and above, I usually sign. In other cases, it will be the HR director or the provincial head. In terms of the current practice.
You
get signed. No, I don't sign that.
No,
that's
you
not by me. I mean, that's delegated to the HR manager or below.
The case is you're not delegated.
Yeah, but I mean, I'm saying the point is that raised by the chair is valid.
Mm.
In terms of the establishment of 300 plus, to expect that the accounting officer might sign every appointment, I mean, I think in practice.
No,
I agree with this one, Mike. I agree. But I think in terms of good HR practice, it would be better maybe to delete it.
Can I raise a point here? I mean, the executive director was telling us now that it's going to place an enormous administrative burden on him or her, or whoever holds that office at any given time. But you know, the fact is that there may be 300 people currently in the ICD, but that doesn't mean that you now appoint 300 people every day. You don't employ staff every day, as and when the vacancy rises. But my understanding of this here is that at the end of the day, the buck stops with the executive director. He's the accounting officer. That's my understanding. And so he has to know what staff are being appointed. He doesn't necessarily have to interview them and place the address, but he has to know. That's my understanding here.
But I think what we're talking about here, we're talking about accountability. By the way, if you delegate something, you don't delegate accountability.
Yeah.
No.
So I think what we're talking about here is accountability. He remains accountable for anything that happens.
Yeah.
But he can delegate the authority and the responsibility itself. I think that's what we're talking about. But he remains accountable. Otherwise, as it stands here, it means every other appointment will have to be done. It will never be delegated. I don't believe really that when I applied for work in the public sector, my appointment, in fact, when the appointment had to go to the MEC office, we had huge problems. Because you'd have a cleaner dying today, and the vacancy will remain open for 5 years for a cleaner.
Yeah.
because all have to go to the MEC office. Everything for signing. I'm raising this to say, really, are we saying this should not be delegated, even to provinces? I'm asking. I want us to be conscious of this. This actually talks to every other appointment.
Yes.
And if it is a delegated function, he cannot delegate the accountability. That's the basic principle, management principle. You can't delegate accountability. You remain accountable. But you can delegate the tasks, you can delegate the authority, but you cannot delegate the accountability. I'm just asking. I'm asking. But I also want to go to section 6 again. It says executive director, this is a non-delegated function, executive director must ensure that complaints regarding disciplinary matters are referred to the national commissioner and, where appropriate, the relevant provincial commissioner. Are we saying complaints now will go straight to the executive director, even from provinces and the channels? Like, what does this mean? If I must get clarity on it, I want to be assured of what we are saying here, vis-a-vis maybe what is happening. I'm asking.
With regard to that principle, the director has a responsibility to ensure, it doesn't mean that he has to do it himself. He just has to ensure that it will be done by who, whatever staff member will be assigned that particular function or duty. But he must just ensure that it is done. It's empowering provision given to the executive director to ensure that those matters are referred to the National Commission and all provincial commissioners.
But what does it mean if you say it's non-delegated? You cannot delegate. What does, in terms of practicing or of implementing it now, if we're saying he can't delegate, does it not mean that it has to come to him? Everything related, I read, and so complaints regarding the disciplinary are referred to the national commissioner and where appropriate. What does it mean?
The responsibility to ensure that those complaints are referred may not be delegated. It's still the responsibility of the executive director to ensure that those complaints are referred to the national commissioner or, where appropriate, the relevant provincial commissioner. Now, that responsibility to ensure cannot be delegated. But it doesn't mean that the executive director cannot ask a component or another staff member or unit to attend to those referrals. Just means that the responsibility to ensure cannot be delegated to another person in the director.
Okay. I'm going at it. I'm checking at it. I want to. And the ICG, because you said they will finally start. Let's go to clause 9. Clause 9 is a non-delegated responsibility as well. And we said it covers the issue of other crimes. Okay, we're saying executive director may, upon receipt of a complaint, investigate any offence allegedly committed by any member of the South African Police Service or Municipal Police Service and may, where appropriate, refer such investigation to the National or Provincial Commissioner concerned. This is a non-delegated function. What does this mean? The Executive Director may, upon receipt of a complaint, what does this mean?
So, Chairperson, the executive director, when receiving complaints other than those covered under this Act, that responsibility to refer that complaint to the appropriate institution for investigation, further investigation, can also not be delegated. Lies with the director, executive director, that responsibility in terms of 9.
In actual practice, what does it mean?
No.
when you put it into practice, what would procedure and what would this mean?
Maybe from a practical point of view, maybe we can ask maybe the executive director to answer this, because this is actually what we have at the moment, it cannot be delegated.
Yeah.
Maybe there's some practical consideration that maybe the executive director would want to respond to.
Executive director?
I think from a practical point of view, again, it is a matter that one can delegate, but I think the approach from a practical perspective would be that a consolidated monthly report will go to the minister. And of course, the national office will compile those reports and put it together. So,
This clause is saying the executive director may, upon receipt of a complaint, investigate any offence allegedly committed by any member of the South African Police Service or Munich Service, and may, where appropriate, refer such investigation to the national or provincial commissioner concerned. And what does this mean?
And say, I'd like to suggest that we write in there, the executive director may, upon receipt of a complaint, cause any offence allegedly committed by any member to be investigated.
Oh, sorry, Chair, I always had the wrong clause. I think in practice, I mean, the complaint will come to satellite office or to provincial office. I mean, that complaint will, in terms of the normal route. And I think that's a matter that should be delegated also to the provincial office.
Jefferson, I'm now confused. Because this is, if we read it 9, the executive director may, upon receipt of a complaint, investigate any offence allegedly committed by any member of the South African Police Service or Municipal Police Service, and may, where appropriate, refer such investigations to the National Provincial Commissioner concerned. This is now outside of the current of the mandate. It is over and above the must and the may. And for that reason, and that's also why I believe it currently is the practice, it's a decision that the executive director must take, because otherwise you might have your provincial officers taking on cases that they should not be taking on. That should be, it's a policy decision that needs to be made, and that is why it's not a delegated power. The delegation comes in where the executive director refers it to the provincial office or to the provincial commissioner to investigate. Now, I agree with Ms. Schaefer that maybe what is missing in the current draft of 9 is the cause, that it's not the investigative director, the executive director himself, but that he must make sure that such that it happens. But it's a policy decision. Here we're talking outside of the mandate of the ICD. We're talking about complaints that are received which we haven't specifically made provision for in the Act, and therefore you need a policy decision on whether we are going to investigate it or not. That's what you need here. And that decision is a policy decision that must be taken by the Executive Director.
But what this means, the executive director may, upon receipt of a complaint, cause whatever
to
be investigated. But it means all complaints will go to the executive director. Does it mean that? I'm talking about those that are not mentioned in section 25, if it is section 25. They will all go to the executive director. Is this what should happen? Not to the provincial head, direct to the executive director. It's non-delegated function. I'm talking now because the ICD is here, the practicability of this, I'm asking. But also let me go, take us to page 24, clause 23. this one it talks to the appointment of investigators. It says the executive director in consultation with the relevant provincial head must appoint the fit and proper person. Okay. This one it talks to the investigators. ICT, what are you saying?
Chairperson, in terms of nine, I think we just had a short discussion. I think that the policy imperatives that the Honourable Mr. Mbai put on table, I think we agree with, but I think maybe the SOPs, all the regulations then can deal with that approach. You know, how does the executive director deals with that in terms of the complaint? So I think that is maybe the appropriate with that in terms of standing operation procedures and the regulations. By the receiving of such a complaint, how do you handle that in terms of the organisation? So I think in terms of the policy imperative, we agree with Ms. Van Dijk. But I think it's a practical issue that we must then evaluate internally.
Okay. One other section the clause I'm trying to look for is the clause that talks to the discharge of people who do not meet the screening requirement.
Mm-hmm.
The discharge. That's number? Which section is that one? Let's talk to the discharge of members that do not meet the security screening requirement. And page 25. Close what? Which
close?
7. A person must be discharged from his or her position as an investigator if he or she failed to conform to the security clearance prescript. I want to check with the state law advisors if this indeed is in line with the Public Service Act. Are they not to follow any procedure?
Security clearances are a condition of employment. So if you fail it at any point, you can be discharged. I know that within government and a whole lot of levels, if you fail a security clearance, if it's a requirement for that position, and you fail a security clearance at any point now or in 2 years' time, it's a condition of employment. It remains a condition of employment throughout, like a criminal record. It's not just you can't have a criminal record when you're employed. You get one along the way, it's a condition of employment.
Without any procedure following.
Yeah.
Yeah. Determination of
So, all of them sitting there at the top of security clearance, if any of them at any point in time now should fail the security clearance, the update, the review, they can be discharged without any process being followed. It's absolutely the done.
Okay. ICD, do you want to say something?
Mm-hmm.
With all these classes that we've referred to. Yeah, we've taken Ms. Kaifa's suggestion. Yes.
Chairperson, the one that refers to delegation of staff.
It's close.
I think it's 7. Mm-hmm. 7-3.
Mm-hmm.
Page 12. Page 12. I think the motivation for saying maybe the issue of delegation in terms of that, also in terms of experience, some members may be aware that we are here some time back, some years back on with before the portfolio committee. Some of the issues that were raised in the portfolio committee issued a report in that regard. Was specifically with regard to this issue. Because also at the time, there was no delegation with regard to the appointment of staff. And the result was that it was taking even too long to appoint staff, you know. Practically what will happen is that the process will involve the person who is delegated to perform this function. In this instance, the executive director will have to ensure that he appoints the panel who will sit for the interview, ensure that the process that is followed is a fair process, and then he then does the appointment. So all the submissions that have to do with every appointment then have to go through the office of the executive director. Now, from an operational view, it becomes more efficient. And also when we look at, for instance, our strategic objective, that talks to a specific period within which appointments in the department should be made. So it makes it easier if some of these functions in terms of appointment are delegated to senior managers within the SSS or within the ICT. Like it is presently, the executive director has delegated, in terms of the Public Service Act and regulation, some of these of his functions in terms of his appointment to senior managers within the ICD, but up to a certain level. For instance, presently, us as a provincial head appoint staff, including investigators, up to the level of a senior investigator. And any other staff above that, your assistant manager investigation, and then upward, then the executive director is responsible for those appointments.
Can I just ask a question then? If that's what is done currently, how do you get around the fact that they've got to get security clearance and that's a duty that only the executive director can do? Or are they not getting security clearance, with other words?
Well, the issue of security clearance, Madam Chair, is that what happens present is that the interview process goes through, and then there's a prior screening to check if a person does not have criminal records and so forth, and then the appointment happens, and then thereafter the person goes through security clearance. I think for practical consideration, the issue of security clearance takes time also by itself. The ICD has been engaging with the national intelligence in this regard, but unfortunately we're not winning because it takes sometimes up to 2 years before an employee can get a security clearance. So if the condition is that before a person is appointed, must have that clearance certificate first, then it may take up to 2 years before a person is actually employed. But what will happen now is that we'll try to do a screening in terms of whether a person does not have criminal convictions and so forth. And I think also the NIA for that process, which is much faster, but my understanding is that they don't call it a security clearance itself, but the extensive clearance happens thereafter, and where they issue the security clearance itself. And that unfortunately takes far more than we would wish to. In fact, there was some talk at some point that if ICD can build a capacity for the clearance, but it was clear that it's such a small department that it cannot do that. So it still rests with NIA. But in practice, it takes sometimes enough 2 years before it gets the clearance.
My question is not around the time. My question is around the fact that we've just said in this legislation that the executive director issued the certificate after the clearance. The executive director issued the identity document to say that you are now an investigator. And what I read from that is exactly that. The executive director's signature needs to be on that appointment. That's what I read in the AGA.
In fact, I think this section talks to the appointments that are in this act, not your cleaner.
Yeah.
Doesn't talk to the cleaner. It talks to the head of provinces. It talks to the investigators. And yeah, I think it's the provincial heads, yes, and investigators.
That's Chairperson. I think when I look at the bill, I think we as a house, we will need some assistance. I'm trying to practicalize at a practical level for the security clearance. The bill states that a person will be appointed upon or when he is security cleared, issued with a certificate. And also we're saying that a person will have to receive policing powers within 3 months of appointment. So practically, maybe if I can grant an indulgence, well, a person applies for a post, for example, an investigator applies for a post, and the question will be then, when the time frame within which the security clearance will be issued will have an effect on the appointment of that person. For example, a post could be advertised, but if and the interview has been conducted, but the question that I'm not sure of whether that by the time the interview is completed and the executive director has decided that this is a candidate that we think should be appointed, will that security clearance have already been undergone through the process of NEAR?
So actually, maybe I should come in there. I think we discussed that last week. Sorry. Yeah, I think we discussed this issue last week in terms of the MIS, and I think it indicates also the practical steps that should be taken to ensure that we comply with the provisions of the law or the Act. It will be possible, I think, if, for instance, in terms of the recruitment process, those documents, those prescripts are sent early enough in the process to NEAR to start with that person. And when that person is then indicated as the candidate indicated by the panel, then that can be done in that specific time. So I think one shouldn't be stuck with the current situation. I think we try to envisage in the bill a new process where there would be appropriate steps, also administratively, also in terms of in conjunction with NEAR, to ensure that those things are done effectively. So I think we must just distinguish between the present situation and the new situation in business in the world.
Proper planning, and there's an element of training, of course.
Yeah.
I was a bit concerned because we had lengthy discussions with the ICD and the state law advisors and ourselves when we drafted this talk. And we drafted it specifically to say that the actual certificate didn't have to be done, but there had to be a process where that was done in conjunction with NEAR. So NEAR, it opens the gap for the executive director to negotiate with NEAR if there are delays, what sort of screening process. So I think we're being taken back to something which we've already resolved. Because if you look at section 4, it says the security screening investigation complicated in section 3 must be done in conjunction with NEAR. And a person may not be appointed as an investigator until such time as the screening, but we haven't said the certificate comes to your appointment gets withdrawn. And we specifically worded it like that because of the concerns raised by the committee about delay. So it lays it open for the executive director to negotiate with NEAR about how to handle those delays and what sort of interim screening can take place. But he can't do it on his own, he's going to do it in conjunction with NEAR. I'm just concerned that we're being taken back to a process which I think has been resolved.
Yeah, no, Chair, I'm in agreement. I think we've dealt with that.
No, I also wanted to alert to that because I feel that we've made provision one for a preliminary screening and then followed the security clearance. But what it says as well is that at any point in time when that security clearance is finalized and the person fails the security clearance, the person will be kicked out. So I don't understand why we revisited this.
Okay. Going back to section on section 29. section 29 NEC. 29.1C. No. Yeah. Any complaint relating to the discharge of an official firearm by police. Are we referring to? Oh, okay, no, not that one. Any complaint of torture or assault. Are we talking about any assault? Any assault. So that if it is 5,000 assaults, they must all go to IPD. If it is 15,000, they all go to IPD. Any assault. Is it not too huge, maybe? Is it not too broad? Any complaint relating to discharge of an official firearm by any police officer, resulting in injury or not, are we saying it goes to using the official firearm, of course? Are we saying it goes to IP? Is this what you are saying? Even if there was no injury, but as long as it was a firearm used, are we saying it goes to IP for investigation? Is this what we are saying? I want us to be sure. Are we saying that? Honorable Honorable Chaser?
Chairperson, I think we also discussed this at length. I must be honest, I don't know whether police officers on or off duty, because just saying that there's charge of official a firearm where there's a complainant with address on or off duty as well. I think we've discussed this issue as well, and the issue that was raised is that there must be a complainant, and that complainant doesn't need to have been wounded in order to be a complainant. You would remember that we used the example of the complaint against VIP protection guys' abuse of firing shots at police at vehicles to get them off the road. I used the example of the Metro Police in Cape Town firing rubber bullets over kids' heads, where there were no injuries. But there is reason enough to lay a complaint, because it's abuse of power, it's abuse of the official firearm by a police officer that carries that firearm. And yes, I think we're talking about all of those.
Whether the police is off duty or on duty.
See, I actually don't think it's relevant whether it's on or off duty. We cover on and off duty by saying it's got to be an official firearm.
Yeah.
That's what we cover it with. So we can actually remove whether that police officer is on or off duty.
Yeah, on that one, I think, I mean, we said earlier, I think Honourable Annalise was out the room at the time, but we said we didn't really need to say where there's a complainant, because you're saying a complaint. So that implies there has to be a complaint. So I would agree that we could probably just say any complaint relating to the discharge of an official firearm by any police officer also.
Any complaint of torture or assault?
Yes, can on this one, Madam Chair. Of course, I just want to record what I read it the last time. Are we seeing police when using their private firearm can shoot people?
No.
Where is it covered here?
You should know. Even the Honorable Judge should not shoot people with his private firearm. So all of us should. They also should not.
But where is it covered? Yes.
Section 7. No, is it 7.9? That is where it is covered. There is a complaint. Okay. F. Any complaint of torture or assault against a police officer. Are we saying all assault? ICD. Are we saying all assault? How many are you receiving? Yes, Honorable Mishachi.
Yes, all the complaints that they received. I think it's mainly we have committed
Any complaint of torture or assault? Any complaint of assault? Is this what we want? Honorable Mule George?
If we're to change.
No, I'm not saying we want to change.
No, I'm just following your argument. It would mean that we have to separate from assault, from torture. If that's why to me that torture is linked, is also related to assault. Assault related to torture. If you take it away from torture, because torture can only happen in police custody. So if you take it away, then assault alone, I would also have reservation. If assault was standing alone. Because then when you stand alone, it means any assault.
I understand your concern about the broadness of assault, but the problem is if you try and start defining assault, then you're going to have a factual inquiry every time someone gets beaten up by allegedly by a police person. So I would be interested to hear the ICD's response as to how many kind of cases like this they do get. So I think it would be better to rather leave it broad than to try and have a factual inquiry. I just wanted to know what happened to the sexual assault. I thought we had included sexual assault because I certainly think we should. And I thought we'd agreed that it would be separately specified because it wouldn't be covered by the broad definition of assault. Yeah.
Yes. I also agree with you that the complaints are too many. But the complaint cannot be a rumor or allegation. So the ICT must receive the complaint to act on. But even these are just rumor, and there is no complaint. Now it becomes difficult and massive for them to can deal with it. Thanks.
ICD?
Yeah, Chair, I mean, that's a real policy call for the members, but currently in terms of the last statistics, Mr. Dlamini indicated that we're talking about 1,400 assault, but also that includes also GBH. So that is matters that is brought to ICD satellite office, provincial offices. If it's in here, of course, it might go up very, very, it might go up to a greater number. So currently about 1,400 a year that we investigate. Or we get complaints of that.
That is GBH.
And common assault, yeah, those two.
Okay. So it's not a big number. It's not like it's something huge.
Thank you, Chair. As I understand it, the police will be obliged to report or to notify the ICD. But we get about 1,400. If you look at this in the last 3 years, the numbers are going up.
Per year, yes.
Nationally, but if the police are obliged to report, that may change the situation.
There's nothing saying here that the police must report every single case of. Let's say, for instance, I'm a police officer. I went to the Shebeen. I got in a fight with Mr. George to my left because he didn't want to pay for my drink or something like that. And then I go and lay a charge of assault. What it says here, if I complain to the ICD, it's not every case that is reported of assault at the police station, as I understand. And I'm actually sitting back because I raised this issue last week, that we are opening it now so wide, Jefferson. And we're opening it wide because we don't trust the police. What did we want to say here? Any complaint or torture or assault against a police officer in the execution of their duty or during the execution of their duty. That's what it was originally. It was when they are using assault, they are using torture when they execute their duty. It comes back to what is the reason for this bill. It's to make sure that we have a police service that is transformed, that respect human rights in the execution of their duties. it and that they don't abuse their power. So I will be glad if we put it back where it's due to, because that would suit me fine. But I mean, if we want to open it wider, ICD's got the report on their successes.
Any complaints of torture? It says the directorate must investigate any complaint of torture or assault against a police officer. Probably if you said in the execution of something like that. Do you think that will actually, you know, because otherwise it's too open.
You would remember that originally it was also said that that complaint must be led by the person that was incarcerated. It must be his legal representative, the station commissioner, any other police officer. That's why I say we are opening it very wide here, but it was the decision that was taken.
So we have got to make it wicked, because I think right now it's too wide. So any complaint of torture or assault against the police officer
during
the execution of duties or something like that. Something like that. Mr. Okay. I think we've discussed this issue. Tomorrow morning, unless there's something new, I understand that you had something separate which you wanted to take us through on. Is there a nothing?
Madam Chair, why don't we deal with this issue which Honourable Kolobana has been raising, the issue of the title?
Okay.
So that we deal with it once and for all.
The issue of the title. This bill is now saying we not, as soon as we pass this into law or act, it will therefore no longer be ICD, it will be IP, which is Independent Police Investigative Directorate. Ms. Kola Barnard is suggesting that we probably change it to something else. I think she what's that?
DPI or DPI?
DPI, something
Department
like that.
Of Police Investigation or...
Directorate
of Police Investigation or Directorate of Police Oversight or something like that.
Directorate of Police
Investigation,
the DPI.
No,
I'm not saying anything.
Yeah.
Do we not have a DPI or...
DPI.
So can I just say that there are three issues that are important here. The one is the independence, the investigators, and the police. And I hear what Ms. Kola Barnard has been saying about IPED. ICD, when it was established, was also not known to people. They didn't know the abbreviation. They had to get used to the abbreviation. And I personally don't have a problem with it, but I think independence is important. I think police is important. I think investigation, the investigative body, is important. It's no longer a complaint body.
And in this bill, we're referring to the directorate.
Yeah.
Quite often.
No, directorate.
So the directorate must also be...
They can call themselves the fourth artist or whatever. My door.
I would also think that IP at the moment, because the title given by Honorable Kola Barnard, it leaves this very important word, independent. So I think we can avoid we need directorate, we need independent, we need police, we need investigate, we need. So there is no way you can avoid these four. So I think that already we are, even us when we started, we were very worried about this name. It looked like a Chinese name, but as we went along, we got used to it. And I think people will get used to it. If they want to give themselves a nickname, they are free to do so. They can call them whatever, the bulls, but not Somali, for sure.
As usual, I want to agree 100%. With honorable George, thanks.
What we are therefore accepting is the fact that we need all these concepts that are here, even the concept independent, we need it, police, we need it, directorate, we need it, investigative or investigation, it must be there. It talks to what the structure is all about. And therefore the IP, you know, seems to be, you know, the in thing. They may, of course, decide later on to refer themselves as Cindy. I mean, that would not really harm anyone. Members, I think we have done what we're supposed to do today. We are meeting tomorrow. We are meeting tomorrow at 9:30, venue V226. V226 is the venue tomorrow. Okay, I won't be there. Okay, we are meeting tomorrow, 9:30, V226. We will indeed be requesting our state law advisors again not to sleep tonight, so that whatever inputs that we make are included in the final cleanup, because tomorrow we'll therefore go through the bill clause by clause. Now we do it, doesn't fit, adopting each clause, so that ultimately, if possible, tomorrow we can adopt this bill. It will be that, but also immediately we'll therefore proceed to the secretariat block. So we'll also request that we get the copies of the secretariat bill. I think we have, but we can always have one or two of them, so that those who may not be having the copies, can have them. Yes, sir?
Thank you, Chief. What we have now, what is concerned today, is the incorporated version. But we also have to see now the ASIC list of amendments. I think the executive director presented the first amendments in the ASIC format. So tomorrow we'll bring the incorporated version, the cleanup document, this one. In addition to that, also the ASIC for adoption purposes.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. In Mafeking, Mafeking is very far from here. It takes me 2 days to arrive in Mafeking. Then I leave this area. So we normally I book in advance because the flights are very scarce. You said tomorrow, and then I need to check whether what is happening on the inside so that I can arrange my booking.
We will definitely talk after this meeting because I will brief you, but they definitely is the meeting on Friday. Because now we will be dealing with a new bill, another bill now, which is the Secretariat. Fortunately, we have had oral submissions from various interested groups, but yeah. So, Honorable, I want to close this meeting.
I was going to talk because my lawyer was in actual fact just that I don't know whether I'll pay him because he did not do a good job. Because I thought he was going to request that we make an offer to the chief whip or the whip that we carry on until a little bit late tomorrow. That is Wednesday. so that even if we meet on Friday for a short while, Thursday in the afternoon, so that we can be free, some of us have got other, we don't want to miss that Friday. They're also here, they already told me you must be in Mafeking on Friday. That's that he's not as articulate as Annelies van Wijk.
Okay. For now, members, we have a meeting tomorrow. The venue is 227 and 226. If there is a change, will it be informed? For now, we have a meeting on Friday, and I really request members that they prepare for a meeting that must sit on Friday. Otherwise, we will not be able to adopt the Secretariat Bill, and we can't afford not to, because it is taking our time. Next week, let me say it here and now, next week, which is next Friday, I think it's the 3rd, we have a meeting, a very important meeting with the department. It will not be on any of the things, it is with the department. And there is no way members will not attend that meeting. And if you want to be absent in that meeting, in fact, even if you are in the ICU, we'll fetch you from the ICU so that you are in the meeting. So please, we have meetings. The fact that we have two bills before the Portfolio Committee is taking most of our time and actually make us not able to do other functions of the committee. Yet we have our threat plan, which we must implement to the fullest. Thank you very much. Let's meet tomorrow. This meeting is over.
Sorry, the secretary now until we were back.